Our next speaker is Rebecca Brewster, who is president of the American Transportation Research Institute, which is an offshoot of American Trucking Association. And they do a lot of the research, study, safety evaluations, deal with a lot of issues the way our foundation also deals with various issues for the industry. And Rebecca has been involved in transportation, economics, safety, a lot of topics that are of importance to us. And the ATRI has just finished a industry survey. An annual survey of the top 10 key issues for the trucking industry, which was just reported last week. So you're going to be one of the first, not of the trucking industry, to hear the results of the top 10 concerns for the industry. Rebecca?
Thank
you. Everybody hear me okay? I have too little voice at
home, and so I feel like I have to shout all the time. So I almost feel like I have to whisper when I'm mic'd up, because I just don't know how to talk.
Go ahead and shout. We're used to it.
I may just unmic and just shout at you like I do at home, and it make me feel more comfortable. Appreciate the opportunity to address you today. For those of you who are not familiar with ATRI, we are the trucking industry's 501c3 research organization. The research we do is focused in the five areas you see here. Pretty much anything that touches trucking has some nexus to trucking. We've either hopefully studied it or have some research underway on it. I've put our website address up here. Every study that ATRI releases, we provide the results free of charge on our website to all interested parties. It is our mission, primary mission, to improve the trucking industry's safety and productivity. So that's what we're all about today, every day. We are governed, as you are, by a board of directors that represents the CEOs of some of the major players in the trucking industry. You see those organizations here. What I think sets us apart from a lot of industry groups is that the research that we undertake on behalf of the trucking industry is determined by a research advisory committee that's made up of what in some circles has been described the most ecumenical group in trucking. Because if you're not inside trucking, what you don't realize here is that we have the Teamsters and OIDA, which is the independent driver group, sitting down with motor carriers who in some cases go head to head over labor negotiations or who sue each other over certain practices. But they sit down together annually to come together to figure out what are the top research needs for the trucking industry. And those are our marching orders at ATRI. So it's a great group of folks who I always like to give credit to. What I'm going to talk to you about today, as Bob said, is every year the American Trucking Association, who we are an affiliate organization of, commissions ATRI to do a survey of the industry. What are the top 10 concerns that the industry is looking at for the next 3 to 5 years? What are the things we really need to be working on and be concerned about and focus our collective energies on? For each issue that's identified, we also ask the industry to rank what are some strategies that collectively we should be pursuing to address those issues. It's used not only by ATA, but by the 50 state trucking associations to help guide their advocacy efforts on behalf of their members. It also is a good, and the last slide I'll show you is the history of this. As we've gone, we started this in 2005, sort of a barometer of what the changing priorities are in the trucking industry. So here it is. Bob said we just released it last week, the top 10 industry issues for 2010. I'm going to step through each of these 10, talk a little bit about what it means for trucking, which in turn means what it means for you in getting product to market. No surprise here, at least in the trucking industry, that the economy came out at first, although quite frankly I was not sure whether this one would come out at first or CSA 2010, which I'll talk about next, which came in at number 2, would come out on top. It's been several tough years for the trucking industry. The fuel price spikes in 2008 really did a number on us, and then the recession created some real depressed freight demand. So we had carriers across the nation parking trucks because there simply was no freight to be hauled. What the good news on this one is that last year, more than half of the respondents to our survey ranked the economy as the number one issue. In this year's survey, that was down to 35%. So some folks in some sectors of the industry are starting to see a return to better times. This is just a couple slides I borrowed from the American Trucking Associations, and just sort of an indicator of how things are. These are trucking companies that have closed their doors. Trucking companies with five or more trucks by quarter. And so you see in 08, we really had some rough times. And again, first quarter of 2010. But hopefully things are starting to turn for the better. ATA does a truckload and LTL loads index. And you can see that in 2009, we were down 14.7% just in the truckload area. Looking a little better for 2010 so far, up 7.2%. However, it's even more dismal in the less than truckload area, where we're not even up yet. In 2010, we're still down 5.5%, but certainly better than 2009 when in LTL they were down almost 23%. Sector breakout percentage increase in loads hauled. First half of 2010 compared to what we were doing in 2009. So things are starting to look better, certainly in tank and reefer especially. What's ahead? Number two, CSA 2010, Comprehensive Safety Analysis. The primary regulatory agency for the trucking industry is the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. CSA 2010 is their new regulatory framework. It's how they're going to evaluate motor carriers and drivers. They're now calling it CSA. It was intended to be fully rolled out in 2010. It's not going to quite make it all the way out in 2010, so now we're calling it CSA. But it affects every motor carrier who hauls interstate in vehicles 10,001 pounds, gross vehicle weight or higher, and everybody who hauls hazmat, including intrastate carriers. They did a pilot test of CSA 2010 in 9 states, so a lot of carriers are starting to have experience with it. It will be fully implemented as we get to the latter half of 2010 and into 2011. It is designed to provide more targeted safety interventions. FMCSA and the state motor carrier safety officers only have so many resources to be able to go out and target the bad actors in the trucking industry. CSA 2010 is designed to score different categories of behaviors so that they know and can more quickly and more readily identify who those bad actors are so they can go after those folks. At the heart of CSA 2010 are these seven, they're called basics. These are the seven categories that CSA 2010 evaluates carriers on. As shippers, you will eventually, when it's rolled out, have access to carriers' CSA 2010 scores, CSA scores, so that you can evaluate which carriers are the safer operators in whose hands you want to entrust your product. We know from some ATRI research that targeting, that there are specific behaviors that do lead to crashes. This is a study we released in 2005. It was called our Crash Predictor Model. Looking at over 500,000 individual commercial drivers, safety records, we identified, according to this, this is our own top 10, that a truck driver who gets ticketed for reckless driving has a 325% increase in the likelihood that they will be involved in a crash within the next 12 months. Very strong indicator. Driving too fast for conditions, again, 62% increase. Been involved in a crash, 87% increase in the likelihood of being involved in another crash within the next year. So we know, as FMCSA does, and they actually used our study as part of their methodology, that there are specific behaviors that commercial drivers exhibit that are likely predictors of crashes. We're getting ready to update this, release the update of this, and we'll have a new crash predictor list available in the not too distant future. But it's a challenge for the trucking industry because there's a lot in terms of crashes that is not in, within our realm and ability to handle. 2009 data, total of 33,000 total fatalities on the highway, not just truck involved. The truck involved piece of that was about 10%. Of those, however, 1540 represents about 55%. According to numbers from FMCSA, those are ones that are caused by the action of the truck driver. This piece right here, those are crashes that are precipitated by the car driver action. There's not a lot that FMCSA, through any sort of regulation, or motor carriers or commercial drivers can do about those, except be on the lookout for stupid four-wheelers. And there's a lot of them. FMCSA at 55%, that piece is actually low. The AAA Foundation did a study that showed that 75% of the crashes involving a large truck start because of the car driver. So it's a tough nut to crack. That one's still up for grabs. But what we can do is work on this, and that is the intent of CSA 2010. That's the last time I asked my 12-year-old to help me with my PowerPoint slides. What you should see here is a decreasing bar graph that shows large truck-involved fatalities going down. We're at our lowest point now in terms of the rate per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. And what you see here, conversely, is the number of registered trucks going straight up. So we're bringing the rate down. We're doing a great job bringing the rate down while the number of trucks on the road are going up. So thanks to TC, that's my son. So from the industry standpoint, we've got this new regulatory framework that's supposed to target the bad actors, which everyone agrees is a good thing. But the challenge is that it's going to have widespread impacts on everyone in the industry. And there's some real challenges with it. There's in those seven basics, there are some problems with the methodology that the industry has identified and that, in fact, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration has fixed. But there are other problems that have yet to be fixed. If you're a trucking company, one of the folks that you deal with, under CSA 2010, until this is fixed, their score will be negatively impacted by crashes that they can't do anything about. I just saw one on the news this morning. Four-wheeler comes on the highway going in the wrong direction. A lot of times these are impaired drivers. Crashes into your commercial vehicle, your truck. That crash counts against you in your CSA 2010 score. Stopped at a stoplight, stopped at a stop sign, truck legally stopped, four-wheeler rear-ends you, that crash counts against you in your CSA 2010 score as currently formatted. That bottom one, not talked about a whole lot outside of the trucking industry, but there are a lot of people who choose to end their life by going in the path of a commercial vehicle, either driving their car in front of it or stepping out in front of it. Those crashes count against the motor carrier. So as you start to have access to the CSA 2010 scores, until these issues are remedied, know that the score may not be completely reflective of the carrier safety performance. Government regulation, third top concern. It's been on a steady climb since we started the survey in 2005. As I said at the end, I'll show you how this one's been climbing up. Just like your industry, we are regulated by the, it seems like the complete alphabet soup at the federal level of government agencies. This is just a few of the ones here and sort of where they have their arms inside of our operations. But we're also regulated by a lot of state and even local entities. Quite frankly, I sometimes question the sanity of people who get in the trucking industry these days because you are facing just untold regulations that you have to comply with. Example at the local level, there are almost daily, it seems, new regulations governing how long a truck can idle its main engine. Obviously, to reduce emissions is the intended goal. But you've got locations where a commercial driver can be fined if they idle their engine more than 5 minutes. Now, contrast that with a commercial driver who is, by law, required to get 8 hours of rest to meet the hours of service. And suddenly you're parked in Albuquerque, New Mexico in the summer, or Fargo, North Dakota in the winter, and you are not allowed to keep your truck running to stay warm. It's a challenge for us. We all know, we've seen the stories on the news, of people who leave their dog parked in a car in the summertime, and the police arrest them for cruelty to animals. Yet we allow or expect truck drivers to crawl into the cab of their, into their sleeper berth and sleep for 8 hours in sometimes equally hot temperatures. What does the industry suggest as far as strategies to deal with government regulation? Well, probably not different from what you are asking Bob to do, is let's bring some reality and a good sense of an understanding of how our industry operates to those who are charged with regulating it. The operating environment. In the trucking industry, our operating margins generally are about 2%. So there's not a lot of wiggle room there for taking on new compliance costs. Unintended consequences. We've got rest areas closing all over this country. We've got drivers who are required by law to take 8 hours of rest. You've probably pulled into a rest stop where it says, you can't park here any longer than 2 hours. So you've got truck drivers who crawl into the cab into their sleeper berth to get their 8 hours of rest, and a cop is knocking on their door 2 hours into it and telling them to move on. So it's those unintended consequences of these regulations that really confound how we operate in the trucking industry. Supply chain impacts. Obviously, you know, you invited me to speak here. What happens to the trucking industry does have a ripple effect through the economy because costs that we can't absorb with 2% operating margins, we're going to have to pass on to the consumer. And also the essentiality of trucking. I was speaking earlier, nobody likes to see big trucks on the road. Everybody's afraid of them. We hate trucks. But imagine if suddenly you went to a grocery store and there wasn't a single thing on the shelf. I mean, people simply don't, the general public does not have a good appreciation for the value of the trucking industry. And apparently, neither do a lot of the folks who regulate us. Hours of service. This is another big one for the trucking industry. Obviously, we have rules that govern how long commercial drivers can be behind the wheel of a truck and can be on duty. We got the very first rule change that we've had in a long time in 2004. Prior to that, the rules had not been changed, had been in place for about 60 plus years. And what they did generally is increase driving time from 10 to 11 hours. They took your off-duty requirement from 8 to 10, so now you had to be off 10 hours. And they took your total on-duty time, because you can be working but not behind the wheel of the truck, from 15 to 14. The 14 and the 10 was intended to get to the 24-hour, more normal circadian clock. So the rules were intended to get folks on a regular cycle, truck drivers. FMCSA got sued over the rules, courts vacated the rules, sent them back to FMCSA. We've been in flux on hours of service rules since 2004. Came out as a top concern in 2007 when the agency had been sued and lost in court and was forced to reissue, and the industry did not know what new rules we'd be getting out of the agency. We're waiting right now for a new rule out of FMCSA. As part of a settlement agreement between the Teamsters and Public Citizen, Joan Claybrook's organization, and FMCSA, they said, we'll stop suing you for the time being if you'll issue new rules. So we're waiting. Right now, we understand it's with the Office of Management and Budget. It's supposed to come out this week, we thought, or next week. But we understand that OMB is still reviewing the rules. But what you should know is every time there's an hours of service rules change in the truck industry, it has a big impact on how we ship product. When we had the first rules change in 2004, there was a lot of bricks and mortar that moved because of that. Distribution channels had to be reconfigured because now drivers could change the way, had the ability to change how far they could drive within the hours of service. If that gets scaled back, that is not an insignificant change in the truck industry. And when you factor in the uncertainty of congestion because of a driver sitting stuck in traffic, that's burning their hours clock, it raises costs. It means companies have to bring on more truck drivers, which we already know is an issue for us. It will have a tremendous impact on how we move product. So obviously the industry's waiting in bated breath to see what the new rules will be. What we think will happen is we believe the number of hours of driving will be scaled back again. We're at 11 currently. We think that may be scaled back. We also have this restart provision that says if you take 34 hours off, you can restart your clock again. We think that restart will get actually increased. We did research back in 2006 to measure the impact of the hours of that first hours of service rule change. It was a very positive change for the industry. Created great safety impacts in terms of reduced crashes and reduced driver injuries. The industry wants policymakers to understand that the hours of service currently as configured work. Since that first rules change in 2004, our fatal crash rate has decreased 33%. And again, from that slide you couldn't see, that's with all lots of more trucks on the road. So something's working. And we think a good part of it is the hours of service rules. So the industry is very concerned that a change will not help us with that number, but in fact may turn that number in the opposite direction. The industry is also looking for ways to better manage operator fatigue outside of the hours of service. Every person in this room has a different need for sleep. Some of you are fine on 5 hours, some of you need 8, and some of you need several naps during the day. Hopefully not during my presentation. But we've been doing some research on fatigue management programs, where you teach drivers to understand, to recognize fatigue in themselves, and the proper countermeasures to take for that. They're better about this in Canada, I'll say. They're certainly more progressively looking at fatigue management programs than I think we will have the ability to do here in the US. But there is a growing understanding that sleep is such a subjective issue that we have to have a better way to manage it than prescriptive hours of service that says you will get this amount of sleep at these times. Another study we did, here's another issue. Teamsters, public citizen, safety groups who have sued the agency over the hours of service rules say you can't have people driving 11 hours. That's when all the crashes occur. But we've done research, and this mirrors other studies that have been done, that says, in fact, the most dangerous times and the most crash-involved hours is when a truck driver first comes to work. And what's the issue? We hope, never say never with government. You cannot expect to regulate what a truck driver does on their off-duty hours when they're at home. So drivers may come to work fatigued because they finally got in from a run and they had family demands and baseball games and to-do lists and all sorts of things that kept them up and not resting while they were at home. They get on the job, and those are when the crashes occur. You're seeing very few crashes, relatively speaking, in those later hours of driving. So again, the industry says there's plenty of data to say that scaling back the hours of driving isn't going to have the intended effect. Driver shortage. This one actually dropped off the radar screen during the recession because everybody was using the lessened freight demand to lay off drivers, drivers with marginal safety records. There's no freight to be moved, so we didn't have a driver shortage. It's starting to come back. I would predict in the 2011 survey, it will even be a higher issue. And what happens when you have a driver shortage? Rates go up. You don't have enough drivers to move the freight, so it has an impact across what how you move your product as well. CSA 2010 also. Now we're going to have tighter or more targeted ways to look at driver behaviors and evaluate those drivers. It's going to move some drivers who are tired of their brother out of the industry, or who simply don't have the safety record to stay in the industry and shouldn't be there, out of the industry. What are we going to do about that as an industry? Well, we have to make it a little more desirable as a career. There's no question that when you train a new entrant driver to get into the truck industry and don't fully equip them to realize that they might spend 3 weeks straight out on the road as a long-haul truck driver, which means you're showering at truck stops, you're eating at the all-gravy buffet at a truck stop, and you're living a pretty rough lifestyle, it drives a lot of people out of the industry. We lose a lot of drivers who come in thinking they want truck driving as a career, who leave, you know, 2-3 months into the job because they just can't put up with it. So we've got to deal with some of those quality of life concerns. And we need to figure out how we get new folks into the industry. It's a real challenge for us. There's been a push by a number of carriers to look at empty nesters, people who have retired from another career. We did a study several years back looking at new entrant driver training. In that study, 17% of the new entrants, new drivers coming into the industry, were 50 or older. So folks who are saying, you know what, we're going to give truck driving a test. We also need to look at the other end of the spectrum, how we get some of the younger folks interested in truck driving as a career before they move on to something else. Fuel. This is one of those issues that for the industry goes up and down, depending basically on what the price at the pump is. Summer of 2008, diesel hit actually over 470 a gallon. I think it peaked at 473 per gallon. We're down, thankfully. But what you may not know is typically in a trucking company, fuel is the second highest expense after labor. In 2008, it surpassed labor as the most costly thing a trucking company spent their money on. What do we do about fuel? Well, we secure our own fuel production here, obviously, and bring more stability there. Number 7, transportation funding and infrastructure. This is sort of a hybrid issue for this year. We have in previous surveys had congestion as a standalone issue. We've had tolling as a standalone issue. We've had highway infrastructure. This was sort of an amalgamation of those this year. Congestion wasn't pulled out by itself because, quite frankly, with the recession, reduced freight demand, we had lower VMT, vehicle miles traveled, and congestion was reduced. But I think everybody understands with the lack of political will up on the Hill to do something about highway infrastructure and reauthorization, with these continuing resolutions to fund transportation, we're not going to be able to address the gridlock that we're facing. We have had a project underway for about 8 years now with the Federal Highway Administration to using real-time truck data, we track where freight is not moving as quickly as it should be. I'll show you some of the examples of that. We've got our top 10 freight bottleneck list. These are places where freight just simply doesn't move on the highway system. We just released it. This is not a list you want to be on. These are the 15 worst places for trucks to move. Quite frankly, if you drive your car around here, it's not so good either. So what we know using real-time truck satellite position data, that at this place in Chicago, I-94, average truck speeds are 30 miles an hour. At the peak, travel times 23 miles per hour. The best trucks can hope to get up to, on average, non-peak, 34 miles per hour. So you can imagine if trucks are moving that slow, pretty much your car is too. So again, not necessarily a list you want to see your hometown on. As I said, we have all this on our website. This is sort of what you can see. I picked Atlanta because I go to, that's where I'm from. Again, this is Spaghetti Junction, we call this, 285. Average speed for trucks, 47, at peak times, 36. Non-peak, they actually get up to about 51 miles per hour. Graphically, again, you can go look at these for whatever location you want. This just tells you that in the afternoon, truck speeds really dip. So at Spaghetti Junction, Atlanta, we have an afternoon peak. We have locations in this country that have a very significant morning decrease in travel times, but are okay in the afternoon. We also are able to use this data to sort of map out the where the truck routes where trucks are moving and sort of what are the key routes. We took a quick snapshot of just 3,000 trucks in Atlanta in a 12-hour period, and then what I'm going to show you is we're going to track those 3,000 trucks over 7 days. So here's where they are after 24 hours. Now, if the line gets darker, it means it's likely a short haul route where the truck is leaving Atlanta and coming back, going back and forth. That's 24, it's 48, 72, 5 days, and 7 days. So clearly, just out of Atlanta, which is a big transportation hub, big activity, and we're facing a lot of congestion, particularly in the southeast. We have these types of maps available for all locations all over the U.S. Again, this is all real truck position data. It's not modeling. This is real truck movement, actually. So what do we do about congestion in the infrastructure? Well, the trucking industry has, for years now, been on the record pushing for a fuel tax increase. Again, second highest operating cost for a trucking company, but we want a fuel tax increase. Why? Because we know it's the most efficient way to pay for transportation infrastructure. We are also interested in more research to identify and to really document what the costs are for some of these quote-unquote creative financing tools that are out there. Under the Bush administration, there was a big push for tolling and privatization of roads. We did some studies to look at what the real cost of tolling is, where we could get our hands on financial information of public toll authorities. We were able to document for every dollar that that toll authority collects in toll costs, it costs 22 to 30 cents of that dollar just in the collection of it. So you're only getting about 70 cents of that dollar for infrastructure. At the fuel tax, it's less than 2%, so 2 cents out of every dollar. We found in publicly available documents, actually, for some of the toll authorities, toll booth supervisors who were earning $90,000 a year. It's really not bad work if you can get it. Another big issue for the industry, onboard truck technology. Particularly in Canada, where there now is a speed limiter mandate, but also the U.S. is looking at the use of or mandating of speed limiters to limit the speed of the truck. There's also an increased push and look at the use of EOBRs, electronic onboard recorders. You may know that a truck driver keeps their hours of service currently on a paper log. EOBRs capture that data electronically, so the driver does not get to fudge on their logs, as some might claim truck drivers do. FMCSA already has a rule out there now that in 2012 will mandate the use of EOBRs for those trucking companies that have the worst safety records in terms of hours of service violations. But a lot in the industry are saying we should make everybody use EOBRs. Let's level the playing field. Force every truck to be equipped with an EOBR so no driver has the opportunity to use a paper log. We've also done a lot of work on a lot of the onboard safety systems that do show a positive ROI. Roll stability control systems. Truck comes into a turn, roll stability control cuts down on the yaw, one of those engineering terms I just recently learned, so that prevents trucks from tipping over. Rollover accidents are one of the most costly accidents in the trucking industry. We did research for FMCSA that showed that for every dollar a trucking company invests in a roll stability control system, they get over $9 return on investment in terms of reduced crash costs. So there's a lot of good data out there that says these systems work. What does the industry want to do about this? Well, they're costly. All of these systems are costly. EOBRs, speed limiters are on trucks, you just have to activate them, but the onboard safety systems. So the industry is pushing for tax credits. We want some help, either insurance premium reductions or tax credits, to help us invest in the system. And as I mentioned, there are a lot of folks out there. In fact, we've got five of the largest truckload carriers in this country have now come out and said, we want legislation that forces everyone to use electronic onboard recorders. Environmental issues. The industry is committed and wants to do what's right to reduce its carbon footprint. Unfortunately, everybody down to the local municipality has its hand in trying to tell the trucking industry how to do that. I showed you the idling regulations compendium. There are a lot of players in this space, and every mandate for equipment changes or whatever the case may be increases the cost on an industry that, again, has very thin operating margins. We've had new engine standards several times in recent history now. We've got numerous idling regulations. There are new tractor, trailer, aerodynamic piece of equipment out there. We just this week had new fuel efficiency standards that were jointly released by EPA and NHTSA, or the USDOT. A lot of activity in this arena, but again, at the end of the day, every mandate comes with costs. One of the strategies that the industry would like to pursue to deal with environmental issues is actually increased use of higher productivity vehicles. Longer vehicles, doubles and triples, which you see if you operate out west, and heavier vehicles, putting more weight on an increased number of axles. Trailer size stays the same, you're just putting heavier, more cargo in it. We did some research to look at what is the environmental impact of longer and heavier vehicles. Intuitively, it makes sense that if you can carry more freight in fewer trucks, you're going to have a positive environmental impact. We did the research that actually quantified those numbers across configuration. So increases in ton miles per gallon, how much freight you can move per gallon of diesel, increased between 17 and 39% depending on the configuration of the truck. So again, longer vehicles, heavier vehicles, means fewer vehicles on the road. Number 10 issue, closely related, truck size and weight. Right now, there are 17 western states where longer and heavier vehicles are allowed. And those were frozen in iced tea back in the 90s. The industry would like to see some additional flexibility to start expanding that higher productivity vehicle network. Why? Fewer trucks on the road means we need fewer drivers. Helps congestion, fewer trucks on the road, helps congestion. And obviously we know there are documented environmental benefits that come from having the fewer trucks because you have longer or heavier trucks. It's pulling the same amount of freight, but in fewer vehicles. There's also a look, there's a four-state coalition looking at dedicated truck lanes along I-70. So you would have new infrastructure or separate infrastructure, depending on where it is along that corridor, that would be for just trucks. It would be separated by a barrier, cars would be over here, trucks would be over here. Somebody's got to pay for that. Obviously, tolling is one way to look at it. So the industry is looking at, if we're going to pay for a toll to have our own infrastructure, can we use higher productivity vehicles in that space? Here is, as I said, sort of the industry's changing priorities over the years. We started this survey in 2005. I've highlighted in red how government regulation has become increasingly a bigger concern for the trucking industry. And you can see I've highlighted in yellow sort of what happens to fuel, depending on what the price at the pump is. When we take the survey, we do this survey every summer. Some issues have dropped off. Tort reform came in at 2005 at number six, but we haven't seen it since 2008. Not that there's been great improvement in tort reform, but there's just other issues that have sort of circumvented it as an issue for the industry. Well, that's it for me. I hope it gave you a little snapshot of sort of the folks who haul your product and appreciation for what we have, what we're up against on a daily basis. As I said, all of our research is available for your charge, so I'm happy to take any questions you may have. Yes, sir?
Is your organization in favor of increasing the weight limits?
Let me separate that. ATA has a policy. After the conference, we just do the research. But ATA has a policy that would like to see the federal weight limit up to 97,000 pounds, from 80,000 pounds right now.
And what do you, can you elaborate on whether you think that's going to happen or what do you think the status is of that?
My sense is that the industry, well, first of all, I should tell you, it is an issue that divides the truck industry, that they can't even necessarily come to agreement on what that should be. That was one of the more contentious policy debates that they had. There is a big hurdle, in my opinion, in terms of, because there's such a public perception, you know, people don't like standard-sized trucks, so you, you start to get larger, heavier vehicles, I think there's a big public push against that, and we know that sort of sways the political will. I think there's more data and research that needs to be done. Quite frankly, I think people think they're more dangerous when in fact the studies that have been done show that those vehicles are typically safer. Why is that? You don't put rookie drivers behind the wheel of a longer or heavier vehicle, you put your better drivers. A lot of it is the environment in which they operate. You've got them running down the road in middle of nowhere, Nevada, where they're not going to be around lots of other four-wheelers. So, you know, they have a safer experience. I think in today's political environment, it would not move, but I think it needs more research and data to show policymakers and the public what the real experience is. Yes, sir.
Would that go with the addition of an axle, like having a triaxle
right.
go up that way?
Yes, you would need additional axles to absorb the weight, you know, depending on what the configuration is. Or you're gonna get the people who say you're just killing our pavement.
Is there a way, a place that we can know which state allows extra weight or?
You can, and I'm trying to think what's the easiest way to say it. We actually have a compendium on our website. I have to make sure it's still there. We actually at one time collected a compendium of oversized, overweight fines, which would, you know, sort of backdoor tell you, here's the weight limit and here's what the fine is. I'm sure there must be, maybe on, there's a Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, CVSA, which is the trade group that enforces motor carrier safety at the state level, would be one place. And in fact, ATA may have one, and I'm just not aware of it.
There was a question back here.
Yes, sir.
One comment that I would like for you to comment on.
Mark can't hear.
I'm sorry.
Can't hear.
Related, number one, to the fact that driver availability is decreasing from years past. For, as I listen to that, that's a good thing for us. Okay, so it's not as much a concern as it was. And the economy, as it relates to our trucking companies, is more of a concern. That's good news for our industry. As more loads are not available out there, that becomes more trucks for us. Do you agree with that?
I would say both of those things are reversing, however.
Okay.
Driver shortage first. It fell off last year, it's back this year. I think it'll be higher next year. Because there are two things driving that. One, freight demand is coming back.
Okay.
So and two, CSA 2010, I think, is going to be a game changer in terms of driver availability.
So that leads to my second question, is what creative things are we doing as an industry, trucking industry, to get more drivers in the seats with unemployment like it is and jobs the way they are? You would think that we would be able to find some creative ways, short of just making everybody go coast to coast.
You would think we would, and quite frankly, that's one of the points we make in the report, is that we are in a very unique position with unemployment at 10% to actually be an employment generator. Average salary of a commercial truck driver nationwide is about $38,000, so it's not bad, the wages aren't bad, it's the lifestyle that kills people. I would say that among the largest truckload carriers, they are really starting to look at some new operating practices that get people more at home time, and that's going to make a difference, because that, I believe, is the one single thing that drives people out of this industry, is it's just tough to be away from home for 3 weeks at a time with your sleeper berth as your bed. And it's really, the cohort of people who find that appealing shrinks every day. I mean, it's just, you know, I can't find young people to do research who think it's cool to work 12 hours a day like I do. So I know I'm not gonna find drivers who think it's, you know, among the young generations who think it's exciting to be on the road all that time. So as an industry, we're trying to address that issue on a regular basis because it is a challenge. I was saying earlier, if we could just get young people in the cab of a truck so they could see technologically how cool it is now, and, you know, sort of what sort of bells and whistles you have inside the cab of a truck, I think we'd start to get some traction in terms of this might not be such a bad career.
Thank you.
but it's tough. And I do think we'll see the driver shortage get worse over the next several years.
The trucks and the ambulance driver, I would contend that the trucks have changed, has the infrastructure changed along with it? Or, you know what I mean? The
infrastructure in terms of how we operate.
The truck stops, the roads, and the loading and unloading, all that.
Right. And you know what? Hours of service change, if we scale, if that gets scaled back, it's going to have a negative impact on driver supply too. Because again, you know, right now the clock is running when you're sitting in line to be unloaded. If we scale that clock back, it's going to hurt you even more. I mean, we have drivers, you know, now anecdotally they say this, until we have EOBRs to prove that this is happening, but we'll have drivers who will say, you know, I had to stop and sleep for 8 hours and I was 60 miles from home. You know, that because I'd run out of hours. That's not a great incentive to get somebody into the industry.
Is overweights now being held against the driver versus being just a fine?
It's one of the basics. It's not necessarily against the driver. It's one of the carrier basics. Are the overweights being held against the driver? The other issue, the other place where that comes up is when you pick up a container at a port. You know, you're, especially if you're a small guy, you pick it up, you go on the scale, you're overweight. You can't open it. It's a sealed container. You can say, okay, I'm not going to haul that. Guess what? There's 40 guys waiting in line who will take it. You know, I mean, that's a real challenge. And that's why I think this sort of cradle-to-grave chain of responsibility has to be greater to port than the truck industry, because the shippers have a role in this. The shippers have a role in hours of service. If you make people wait in line to unload and they're burning their hours of service, they're going to sit on your property because we don't have anywhere else for them to go. Yes, sir.
I know this is about trucking, but do you track freight being shifted to rail from trucking? I mean, track like overall freight and how much of it may be moving to different modes of transportation?
ATRI doesn't, ATA does, but what I will tell you is that rail intermodal is such a small percentage of, right now, of freight, how freight is hauled. Even if it expands at the rate they're saying, it'll still be, I believe, according to ATA, probably 2% of all the freight hauled in this country. There just isn't, quite frankly, there's not the capacity, rail capacity, out there currently. And ultimately, the market decides. If you're okay with your product getting hung up at the intermodal yard in Chicago for a while, and it's not time critical, then it probably makes sense. And rail does make sense for a lot of product that isn't time sensitive. But there's a lot of stuff out there that at the end of the day, it's got to go on the highway.
What percentage of truckers do you think are independent versus
working for fleets? I should know that number. I don't. I will tell you, we do a satellite radio program. Every other Thursday, we talk to truck drivers about our research. It's the most fun I have had in my career in years. We started it 2006. They asked us to come on, and they said, we want you to talk to truck drivers about research. I thought, oh, we'll get two programs out of that before they'll say, thanks. It's been fun, and we've been doing it since 2006. Most of those guys are owner-operators. Now, maybe they're the guys who have freedom to stop and call in and ask us questions. I don't know, but it does seem like most of those guys will say, well, I drive for myself.
That's a really good question, and knowing that ratio for our industry.
Okay. I'm sure it exists. I'm sure it exists, and I have probably seen it and just don't know it off the top of my head. But you know what? I'll find out and get it to Bob.
Great.
Yes, sir.
You're talking about ways to pay for new infrastructure. Do you have any data as to what percentage of our 2290 taxes are paid for new construction versus repair?
I don't. It's a good question. I know that the projections are for, even if we increase the fuel tax, just to maintain the system is tremendous because it's in such disrepair. I mean, just if we just dealt with bridges and overpasses, it is... It defies logic how much money is needed in the system right now, which is why our research called for a fuel tax increase, recommended a fuel tax increase of 25 cents per gallon. Now, we can do that because we're researchers and we don't advocate for things, so we have a little latitude to say this is what it needs to fix the problem. but that's a pretty big
deal. You don't have to pay for it.
Right. It's okay. I have motor carriers on my board, and I'm still employed, so it's okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Thank you, Rebecca. Really appreciate your input. Very good data.
Thank you.
And we will have these slides available on our website in a few days.
I will, Bob, I will get you a PDF right now. It's like 12 megs, and I don't think anyone wants to download that.
Okay.
So I will get you a PDF.
Oh, I can PDF this
okay,
if you
perfect.
Want. No problem.
Perfect, because it is pretty unwieldy right now.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much. Well, we're running a little ahead of time. If you want to take, does anybody, you want to take a break or let's take a break? All right. 5 minutes.